Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 7. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. Good to have you along for another edition and bringing in the guy you want to hear from. He was active on Twitter all weekend long, lighting it up with his tweets. The one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadisco. What's up, Doc?
I didn't have anything else better to do. There was no game.
Have you ever been, I was talking on my radio show, and I said, I've been to a lot of downpours. I've been to a lot of, snowy games, just blistering cold games. I've never experienced what I watched Saturday night. Not at all.
The lightning storm.
The lightning storm.
The only time I've been at one like that, we had one when I had a real quick stint down in Jacksonville right at the end of my career. You get a lot of storms that roll through there, especially kind of that late summer, early fall. And, we had a game delay for lightning. And, oh, my God, biggest buzzkill ever. That's about the best way to put it, because you get up for the game. You're all fired up. I mean, there's all this physical and emotional work that goes in to get ready for a game. Hold on. We're just going to sit here. Might be a half an hour. Might be an hour and a half. I think the one we had in Jacksonville, I think it was probably about an hour to an hour and a half delay, and then played the game. So we did go ahead and play the game. Man, it is hard to get back up for that. It really is.
Are you saying in the end it might be better that this game was canceled than play it that night?
I don't say that because in my opinion, and this is something that I tweeted about a little bit, there's a massive improvement that comes between that first and second game. If you have a good, well-coached team, a lot of development comes week one to week two. You get a chance to see how things look in an actual game situation. And I can't emphasize enough, it doesn't matter how much you practice. It does not matter how much you scrimmage, spring games, whatever. Until you play a game against somebody in a different colored helmet, it's different. It just is. It is unlike any other thing. And again, my numbers could be wrong here, but I remember Coach Osborne always had some line about how one 3.5 hour long football game equated to the equivalent of about 3 weeks. Well, not that much. I think he said it was like 2 weeks of practice in terms of the amount of development that you can
see. Really, that much?
Yeah, because all of a sudden you're seeing everything in true, everything's truly going 100%.
Yeah.
There's no holding back. People are really laying it out all on the line. And it doesn't matter how much you try to get up for a scrimmage. It doesn't matter how much is dependent on a scrimmage. Something clicks with a game. It's intellectually and emotionally different than any scrimmage will ever be. And the speed is different. And you're seeing people, that first few plays, you're seeing guys do stuff you just haven't seen before. And you don't get that kind of experience until you get into a game. So missing the game, I think, is huge. I really worry about how this is going to affect Nebraska going into that second game. Now, I'm not trying to put a damper on Scott Frost, the home opener, anything like that. I'm just saying if I had a choice between playing the game or having it canceled, yeah, you want to play that game every time.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned the speed of it, but just going against other competition, right? I mean, you're going against, instead of going against the guys you've gone against every single night, every single day in practice, you're getting a different look at a different human being, which
it is.
You don't know their tendencies and all that stuff.
Exactly. And until you start playing games, there's kind of an ability to know how to handle those differences. I mean, I can go to practice, and when I was playing at Nebraska, I was having to butt heads with Terry Keneally and the Peter brothers and Wistrom and John Perrell and Kenny Walker and just Dave Noonan. I mean, just this endless run of one great football player after another until you got to, you got to see something different.
No.
And every week you've got something different, but knowing how to handle those differences there's a little bit of a developmental skill set that you need that you don't get until you get into a game.
Time now to take up an update from the Remington Trophy, because the Remington Trophy is the official sponsor and presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Don't forget this year's Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. 6:30 will be your cocktail hour, 7:30 for the dinner and program. For event and ticket information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Time now for our first of many this year, Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. And we kind of touched upon it last week as who we were going to talk about. But it is, you know, we talk about some of the Nebraska kids that have left the state to go on to be successful elsewhere. It does happen to other programs in other states. And this week's spotlight focuses on the center for Alabama, and that is Ross Piersbacher. Ross Piersbacher was one of the most highly recruited linemen coming out of the state of Iowa, what, 5 years ago. Nebraska wanted him badly. Iowa wanted him badly. Iowa State wanted him badly. He was originally committed to the University of Iowa, and then Nick Saban comes in and says, why don't you come down to Alabama and
play? And win some national titles.
And it's actually been the smart decision, because he's been a four-year starter now, or three-year starter, played a lot as a freshman. He's played almost everywhere on the line. This year he's made that switch to center.
And we've seen that happen a lot. Yeah, he's kind of played all over the place, kind of had a spot locked down at guard. And then, you know, it's kind of the old act, coach him to action. Put your best player at center. And I think left tackle kind of gets sort of a little pub there, too, for best player. That's kind of its own position.
Okay.
Really. But, yeah, you always put the smartest guy and that best athlete at center. And that happened this year. So, and Alabama's had a run of really good ball players at center. And guys, I mean, this is what I think third year in a row we've had an Alabama guy who is probably – he's on the watch list, but, I mean, third year in a row we've had a guy who I think ended up in the top 10 at the end of the season.
But, you know, when it comes to the end of the season, here's a guy that's never played the position before, but he's probably going to be there at the end, right? I mean, when you say take your best player, your best athlete on the line
– incredibly well-developed
guy. He's 6'4", 309.
He's – and, again, not your classic center with the height that he has. Normally, you think of a guy at the center. It's usually that 6'2 and a half, 6'3 guy. He's just a little bit taller than that. But it gives him great reach. Excellent, excellent run blocker. And you kind of expect that as a guy coming over from that guard spot. It'll be interesting to watch his development at the system, but he's one of the – I'm sorry, his development within the system as a center – just because, again, he hasn't started full-time there before. And so there's going to be some development here, but he's a guy that if you watched him at the guard spot the last couple of years, the guy's been a phenomenal lineman for Alabama.
And we mentioned that. Here's a kid from the state of Iowa that left the program. So, you look at Noah Fant over
there.
It happens other places. So I know Husker fans.
But if you're an Iowa kid, here's a good question. Does anybody other than Alabama get this guy?
No. No. Because, and he probably thought, well, if I go to Alabama, I'm still going to get a good shot to play in the National Football League, and I'm going to win national titles. If he goes to Iowa and is an offensive lineman, he's going to be in the NFL.
NFL shot's definitely still there.
Yeah, but here you go. Boy, I get to go play at one of the most storied football programs in football, and I know I'm going to be playing at least in the college football playoff, and I'm going to be playing probably for a national title and win a national title like he did last year. For more information on the Remington Trophy watch list, go to RemingtonTrophy.com and look at the watch list. Hey, of course, this is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. That means we're drinking beer, lots and lots of beer. This tonight, we're actually going back to a beer we tried late last year. But we want to bring it back around because it's an afternoon drinking beer. That's the best way. If you're going to drink beer in the afternoon, this would be the beer you want to drink.
Is that an alcohol percent?
It's 5.5. Yeah, it's pretty. I mean,
for what we drink, that's a middle of the road.
That's middle of the road. It's the Metz Jubilee. Of course, Metz Brewing Company is iconic in the state of Nebraska, iconic in Omaha, and Infusion Brewing Company has launched the Mets Jubilee, which, of course, Mets was around from 1864 to 1962, brewed in Omaha, again, at the Infusion Brewing Company. It's a German-style lager, and it pays homage to the Mets family heritage. Every batch is lagered for 4 weeks before filtering and packaging to ensure a clean, crisp lager taste and a smooth finish. You got a 5.5% alcohol by volume, an IBU of 20. Now, Rob,
I had a six pack of this in the fridge literally last week.
And did you drink it already? Is it gone? And my wife just brought you down some Czechoslovakian plum dumplings.
Dude, it is. I'm hitting the whole Germanic Eastern European experience here at the Justice.
Now you're Czech. Now, and my wife is Czech. Do you do the plum dumplings in your household?
Nah, my family's not big on the whole Czech food thing. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
You disappoint me as a Czech.
Well, I'm not saying I don't. I got some Ethanits in the freezer right
atta
now.
Atta boy. See, this was a big thing over the weekend. We had fried chicken. We had the cottage cheese and chives and lots of plum dumplings.
That's good stuff.
I did 8 of those the other night in one sitting. 8 plum dumplings in one sitting.
A little disappointed hearing that.
Well, you think you could do more?
I'm saying, did you need 8? Maybe you could have cut yourself off at 6.
I know, but it was a challenge at that point.
They're pretty damn good.
It was a challenge at that point. If you're listening on Husker Max, thanks for going to what we believe is the authority when it comes to Husker content. Day in, day out, minute in, minute out, Husker Max delivers at all times of the day. And if you haven't checked out that series, Rob, you were a feature of their series, weren't you? What's the name of it? I should know this, and I don't. Their Return to Glory series.
Oh, the one where they're profiling all the previous players.
Yes.
Yeah, I was on there. Almost kind of surprised. I was like, hey, wait a second. I don't even remember doing this interview. Actually, I do, but it was a couple years ago.
Yeah, so they keep doing it, and it's good stuff. Just go there. They have podcasts from other people. They've got almost every single newspaper article. HuskerMax.com.
Any news article that goes out, yeah, that they post.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. Don't forget, if you are going to go to the Colorado game or any game, home or away, ticket. Express.com is the place you want to go. Talked to Jessica last week. They're just busy. The excitement couldn't be any more higher than it is. They've got your Champions Club passes. They've got your parking passes. They've got your club seats. They've got anything you want. Just go to TicketExpress.com. And I tell you what, Scotty from Husker Hounds is still grinning from ear to ear. I saw a picture of him the other day at the game. He had this cool-looking Hawaiian shirt on. It was cool. He had his family at the Husker game. Nice. But you can say, I know where you shop. You shop at Husker Hounds and HuskerHounds.com.
The guy is on cloud 9.
3 locations in the Omaha area. Check them out at HuskerHounds.com. I'm letting Rob eat these plum dumplings and drink beer at the same time. So
in front of you.
In front of me.
You don't need any more
That's
dumplings.
Mean. But we talked briefly about the cancellation. And before we move on to Colorado, because that's going to be a big topic of discussion today. But Nebraska and Akron are holding that December 1 date open in case they need to play the game to become bowl eligible. I would have liked to see them play Iowa State because Iowa State canceled their game too. But
it's a better opponent than Akron.
But it makes perfect sense to say, okay, let's hold on to see if we both need this game on December 1st.
And that was the other thing I was worried about, was the bowl eligibility aspect of it. Development between game 1 and game 2. I think it's huge. But yeah, what if this was a potential 6th win for either team?
What time did you get into the stadium the other night, and what was it like?
So here's the thing. I honestly, your dad works for the university for nearly 4 decades. You pick up some grapevine sources.
Yeah.
I knew the delay was coming. And so I held off until going in until, because basically I didn't want to get all fired up, get sit there, and then, oh, now we're going to sit here for 2 hours. And so I kind of waited. I knew a delay was coming. My hope was it was going to be, okay, we're going to have this 15-minute delay and then go. And so you had a 15-minute delay, then a 30-minute delay, then another 30-minute delay. And then they kept doing that. Eventually they just canceled it. I never went.
You didn't see the tunnel walk?
I did on TV.
You know, the reception to that.
Well, I streamed it. How's that?
You know, the reception to that.
So I watched it. I didn't watch it live because it was one of those things where I'm not going to go until I know this thing's kicking off. And I'm not talking about a kick off. I'm talking about playing the game. And I was told, okay, they might do this kickoff, but then they're going to be sitting for another 30 minutes to an hour. You already knew that.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the reception to the tunnel walk, you know, the crazies are like, it's the greatest thing ever. But I've heard some backlash on it that was like, they weren't happy with it. And here's what I have to say to that.
I liked it.
It's a video, but at the end of the day, it's a video open. And I think people will always, especially the old guard, will always compare like the 95 one where the trophy came out of the middle of the field. And that was a cool thing. I mean, it's hard to reinvent the wheel every single year. I mean, it's hard to do something that gets the crowd pumped up. I mean, you would think you don't really need a tunnel walk as much as the tunnel walk itself is the players coming out of the locker room. That should get you pumped up enough.
And that's, I think, was what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like back in the day when Miami would roll out with the fake smoke and all of that. It's just that's the main thing. The lead up to it, I mean, if you want to throw highlights, historic highlights, those were always kind of fun when they did that. Yeah. They used to show kind of iconic plays from Husker history. I always dug that aspect of it. But I thought it was pretty good. I liked the music choice. The ex-ambassador's jungle.
Yeah.
You know, it's not serious. I'm a bit of a traditionalist, but even I thought it's okay, we need something new. There's a lot of really good music out there. Change it up a little bit.
You know, I think people look back and go, God, remember the animation where they used to have the jets flying across the state of Nebraska and then the trophies would drop? Well, you haven't had a trophy in 20 years, so it's hard to
that
drop trophies in.
That was kind of a tough one,
yeah.
When you did that in the early 2000s, that was 3-4 years ago.
If you're Scott Frost, and I'm asking you to put it yourself in his shoes, I mean, you get pumped up, you go through that whole emotion. Are you physically drained at the end of the day when you cancel? Is it a letdown?
I think by the time they cancel, you're emotionally drained.
Okay, and that makes perfect sense. Now you start over, and now Colorado comes on the chopping block, and this is what people have been wanting to see. This is the old Big Eight. This is the old Big 12. I think
Akron. I mean, even if Akron is a MAC title game caliber team. Do you really care about Akron?
No, I don't.
Of course, we didn't care about Northern Illinois last year, and we saw what happened.
Yeah, but I think we brought it up last week is when we were talking about this game. We didn't really care about Akron as much as we cared what would Nebraska look like against Akron.
Exactly. It was how they were going to handle them. And again, I keep going back to that whole development between the first couple of games. Even if Nebraska looked pretty mediocre against Akron, I'd expect them to look a lot better against Colorado. Whether they win or lose, I think they'd look better against Colorado if they had that game under their belt. But it is a big game because you've got a team in Colorado that, you know, last year I think people kind of downgrade them a little bit because they look at last year, and Colorado did have a bit of a down season. Season before that, they had an excellent, excellent year. I think
they took people by surprise that year.
They did. New coach. I think they're a very well-coached team now. I think it's the first time in a while that they've actually had we're talking pre-Dan Hawkins, that they've had a really good coach there in Boulder. They lost a lot of guys to graduation in the draft off of that 2016 team. And I think that when you haven't had time to really develop a team and develop depth, you lose half your starting lineup to graduation or the draft, you're going to have a down year, and that's what happened last year. But I still think they're an excellent team, and they've got a couple of guys that can do some serious damage.
Well, I think you're talking about especially quarterback Steven Montez, who had a good game against Colorado State last week.
Montez is a guy who I think is going to end up in the NFL.
Really?
I think he's a guy who's going to continue to develop as a pocket passer. I think when he goes to the next level, he's going to have to.
Now, he had a 38-yard run score, too, the other day.
He did, and that's the thing. I think a lot of people look at him as kind of more of a classic dual threat. The guy's got an NFL-caliber arm. He can throw the ball, and he's got good accuracy and really, really good arm strength. And I think he could do, like I said, he can do some damage there. So it's going to be interesting to see how well Nebraska can contain him. And it's just, God, there's so many unknowns because, you know, Colorado hasn't seen Nebraska play, but neither has anybody else.
Well, you know, Steve, I mean, let's go back to Montez. 22 of 25. I don't care who you're playing, only three incomplete passes.
Even if Colorado State's a horrible team.
And they are. Colorado State is a horrible team. But
they are not good, but still. The completion percentage is a sign of how accurate that ball is. It's not necessarily a sign of a bad defense.
Trayvon McMillan had 10 carries for 103 yards. He was averaging 10 yards per pop. Receiving, Laviska Shenault had 11 catches, 211 yards. It was 20 yards every time he touched it. And KD Nixon had six catches for 112 yards, 18 yards a catch.
And that's the other thing, too. It's not just one guy. So they've got a handful of different guys that can really do some damage. It makes it tough to defend against. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I think you look at some of those teams that Central Florida played late last year, when Memphis was at full strength in the conference title game. You look at South Florida. A lot of these Pac-12 teams are probably a little more of that ilk than they are what Nebraska's going to face in the Big 12. I'm sorry, I said Big 12, in the Big 10. It's kind of these teams that like to move around. They like to spread the ball around. It's a spread offense. And those teams can do a lot of damage in terms of putting up a lot of points and a lot of numbers. And Chenander's defense, he even says it's kind of predicated on making the big play, getting the interception, getting the fumble, getting the sacks. But you got to be willing to give up some yardage here. And this is a team that can spread that ball around and put up some yardage.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, maybe you've been asked this, maybe you haven't. Who has the advantage in this game? A Colorado team that has a game under its belt but has not watched film on Nebraska, or a Nebraska team that yet hasn't played but has watched Colorado play one game and kind of get a feel for what athletically they can do?
I'm Colorado. I think having that game under the belt is the bigger issue. That first game development, that first time you get to pop somebody with a different colored uniform, I cannot emphasize enough how big a deal that is. You know, and I get the whole film thing. You know, they got enough film on Frost's playbook. They got enough film on what Chenander's done. I don't think that's going to be an issue now. It's a different group of players.
I was going to say, you have different athletes, though.
Yeah, it's a different group of athletes. But I still think, from Nebraska's standpoint, they themselves knowing what they are and are not capable of doing, as well as just that general development, I think is a bigger thing. If I had a choice between the two, I'm definitely saying you want Nebraska to have played that game last Saturday.
So you're giving Colorado the upper hand as far as advantage. Nebraska's still a favorite going to this game.
But I think it's home field only, which normally they'll give you what? 7 for home, or is it 3?
It depends on the home field, but usually anywhere between 3 and a touchdown.
Yeah, and I think the line's 4 right now.
Yeah.
Which you can roughly say that, you know, Vegas is basically saying Colorado's at least as good, if not better, than Nebraska as a team. We just got the home field advantage.
My son came back from Lawrence, Kansas, was in Lincoln this weekend for the game. He said there was like twice as many people just in Lincoln. I mean, throw out the stadium. He goes, there was just so many people in Lincoln, period.
Yeah.
And I am sure
Lincoln was packed this week. Yeah. It was nuts. You know, my parents weren't able to go to the game. They sold their tickets to a neighbor. Neighbor bought them for their son, who he and his family drove up from, got like 4 hours somewhere in southern Kansas to go to the game. So I think he had a lot of people who came back. They wanted to be able to say they were there to watch this first game.
Owen's highlight was he was down at a frat party, and he's like, hey, Adrian Martinez was there after the game. I'm like, well, he wasn't bruised or battered, so he was probably ready to go because he didn't play a game. He was probably ready to party it up. Well, yes, players do party after games, believe it or not.
We did once in a while. It is college still.
What do you think
That's
about
when you see them partying the night before, you gotta worry.
Well, but they're all kind of cloistered in a hotel room. It's hard to party the night before when you're a member of the team, isn't it?
I don't think they were under Callahan.
Really?
Yeah, don't you remember that? There was a couple of guys who got...
Yeah, you're right.
Got raked through the media because they were out on the street night before the game.
Oh, yes. The Callahan years. We're not reliving those. They've been frosted over. Ba-dum-bum.
By the way, that was horrible.
By the way, I'm sick of all the frost. Aren't you sick? Come on. Even my wife goes, I'm sick of all the frost advisories on Facebook and Twitter. She's like, enough already. It does get because you're not doing anything new at this point. It was funny the first time. It was cute. But now, if that's your only game on social media, you have no game left. Or you're just late to the game and you don't know how to play.
Yeah, we need to move on from that one. It was good.
Yeah. Move on. I wish Scott would come out and say, okay, I'm done with all the frost advisory things, okay? Let's move along and just play football. Colorado comes to town. This is the renewal of the old Big 8, Big 12 series. I love this. I wish Nebraska could find more. I wish it could play Kansas State. I wish it could play Iowa State. I wish it could play Kansas. I'm glad. I wish it could play Oklahoma more. I wish it could play. I like the fact that they're playing Colorado. This game means something to
somebody. It's an interesting game, and I think it's impactful for the Nebraska fans. I mean, I think they're excited to see it happen. This is not a team people around here like that much.
No, and haven't for some time.
No, even after Bill McCartney retired, even Gary Barnett was like McCartney 2.0 for Nebraska fans. I think a lot of it came from that 2001 game, but they, even after Barnett was gone, Nebraska did not like Colorado.
It's a good point. Nebraska did not like but respected Oklahoma. That was a rivalry built on respect. I don't think the Colorado rivalry, there was never respect.
We did not like these guys. You knew
but
they
did
were
you respect
good.
Them? I mean, as the program as a whole.
From a talent standpoint, you always had to respect the talent they had because they were, historically, they at that time period, through the better part of the 1990s, they were an absolute who's who of next spring's NFL
True.
Draft. Kind of the thing that I likened it to, and I put this out there on Twitter, is that they were the Ohio State of that era. Might win a national title. They're going to have a good season either way. But they were that one non-Florida school that would literally put two-thirds of its roster into the NFL every single year. I mean, Colorado just churned out players left and right. It was mind-blowing the amount of talent they had. McCartney and Barnett did a great job just hauling all these kids up from Texas and California, got them into Boulder, usually let them have sex with the coach's daughter.
Wow.
They did.
There's a Salinasi joke.
Dude, Shannon Clavel, too. I think McCartney's daughter had two kids with Shannon Clavel.
Wow.
So, couldn't help. I couldn't help
that's
it.
That's fine.
It's Colorado. Couldn't help it.
And that's fine. It's good to throw that smack around. Of the teams in the Big 12, who did Nebraskans hate worse? Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas State, or Colorado?
You know, we hated Texas, but that was one of those things. Freaking everybody hates Texas.
And you hated Texas just because they're the rich guys on the block.
It was Texas. You just had the nice car, dated the cheerleader.
Yeah.
It just, you hated Texas. But again, everybody did. There was kind of this odd organic hate for Kansas State. And it was sort of bred out of the fact that they were that team that came along, all of a sudden got really good really fast, and their fans had no idea how to handle it. You had this coach in Bill Schneider, who, incredibly respectful guy. I have a ton of respect for Bill Schneider. Quentin Newyear, who is an All-American center for Kansas State, he's a Nebraska kid. Ulysses Nebraska Centennial High School, walk-on offer from Nebraska, scholarship offer from Bill Schneider, went to Manhattan to play for Schneider. I asked Quentin once, hey, what was it like playing for Bill Schneider? And Quentin always said, he goes, you know what? When you screwed up, you felt like you disappointed your dad.
Kind of like with Osborne, right?
It was. I always respected that about Bill Schneider. Nebraska fans, I think there was a little tiny bit of emulation of Osborne in terms of how you tried to be as fans. Kansas State fans were just the worst human beings on the planet.
Well, and here's why. Because
they were horrible.
They got good so quick, and they thought they'd been there the whole time.
That's my point. They didn't know how to deal with winning. There's a way to deal with winning. Alabama wins out. Their fans are like, hey, we're just going to keep wearing blue blazers and large flowered hats to the games and tailgating with white tablecloths because that's what we've always done, and that's how a respectable Southern team does it. They know how to win. Kansas State, no clue how to win. And it was just, oh, my God, they were horrible.
And fans. I don't know if they even to this day know how to win.
They might, from a fan standpoint, they might rival Colorado when it comes to kind of hardcore nastiness, which even the Colorado fans, it was the same thing. Bill McCartney came in kind of mid-late 1980s. All of a sudden, Colorado got really good really fast, and their fans really weren't quite sure how to be fans of a winning team. And so the way Colorado fans did it was they'd chuck snowballs and empty whiskey bottles at you down on the sideline the whole game.
I mean, I remember when I was still working in television that we'd go out to Folsom Field and they'd have Coors Light ready to go right after. As soon as the game was over, the press box opened to Coors Light. You could still drink beer in the stadium in full cans. It was dangerous.
I got hit by a lot of objects in that stadium. I know how dangerous it was.
But if you want a perfect example of, and people may be going, why was Colorado not able to sustain? If you want to see a program that did not participate in the arms race of facilities, Colorado didn't participate. And I think at the end of the day, that hurt that program. You can only sell the mountain so much.
No, I agree. And they were a school that, in terms of, you know, you had Bill McCartney go through there. Neuheisel after that, I thought Neuheisel was kind of a fun, halfway interesting experiment. Worked okay. They won some games. They got some incredible recruits there, but in the end, it just wasn't a great fit. And then Gary Barnett came in, and I thought Barnett did an outstanding job. I think they had issues there with Barnett in terms of...
Strippers.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it was Barnett himself that he knew about this stuff. But he had issues there in terms of sexual harassment, sexual assault. And it kind of forced Barnett out.
Yeah. And then he had Dan Hawkins.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a Big 12.
But when that happened at the time, I remember the university president... She kind of Harvey Pearlman to Colorado.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I think she really, and you know, justifiably so. I can't say I have a problem with it, and I don't say that in the sense I want to see Colorado lose football games. She wanted a really, really strong focus on academics and citizenship, and Colorado's an excellent academic institution. It's a great school. And that was what she wanted to focus on. And I think they had, from an admin standpoint, athletics received very little support after that. And that shows in the facilities. It shows in everything. I don't think anybody cared. As long as the school maintained its academic standing in the Pac-12 conference, everybody was happy as a clam, and it didn't matter. And I think athletics took a big step backwards there because of it.
Of course, you can always follow Dr. Rob and his wit and wisdom on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. It's DocTalk Sports. Or you can send us emails, DocTalkSports@gmail.com. DocTalkSports@gmail.com. Speaking of emails, we got quite a few coming in. Tim has the first listener question of the week. Doc, is it unreasonable for me to think that Akron should have been made to sleep on cots in the Hawk Center and fed leftover Valentino's pizza and Runza's so I could see the Huskers play and not spoil my weekend? Asking for a crap load of Husker fans who apparently think so. Tim from Geneva.
You know, that was the official reason they gave for not playing the game on Sunday was just how do you figure out accommodations for a travel squad worth of a football team, as well as all the ancillary staff as well, too. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. When they check out of the hotel, they're gone. You check out, you head to the stadium, you don't go back. And I think once that happens, I mean, from a logistics standpoint, it's an absolute nightmare. Could they have made it happen? I think they could have found two or three hotels, spread guys out a little bit. And I think they could have made it happen.
But it's still a logistical nightmare at 10 o'clock at night.
It is. And could they have made it happen? Yeah, they probably could have made it happen. But you're definitely putting that visiting. Here's the thing. you want both teams, when it's an away game, one team's definitely going to always have the advantage. You're at home. You're in a familiar environment. You're in your own stadium. You're in your own place. The visitor's at a definite disadvantage. There's a pretty big amplification of that logistical disadvantage if you make them spread out, kind of hit that reset button. None of those guys are going to go to bed until Lord knows what time. Midnight, maybe?
Yeah.
If you're lucky, by the time you get changed, figure out where everybody's going to go, get guys on buses, and then keeping track of guys like, okay, who's where exactly? That's the other issue. You kind of want to know where everybody's at. And the university, Akron in this case, has a responsibility to take care of those guys. And if you don't have everything pre-planned from the beginning in terms of knowing where everybody's going to go, you're kind of creating a little bit of a liability there in that situation. So I understand why they didn't do that. I get it. It would have been nice to be able to do that and say, okay, we're going to have everybody go back to the exact same hotel, go to bed. We're doing this tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll pretend it's an Iowa football game. They always play at 11.
I love 11 o'clock games. Tim asked this. Frost often talks about three progressions on mindset for the team. And I'm reading these cold, so if I stutter a little bit, forgive me. Something along the lines of wanting to play, wanting to win, and expecting to win. The last being the most championship caliber mindset. Frost seems to have an idea when that switch for UCF to expecting to win. Do you get the impression that the players of our Husker team have switched or flipped, or do you think they're just excited about being part of something new and want to start the progress? Or is everything just a blur of the three mindsets all at the same time?
That's a good question. It's a tough one to answer, though. Until they start playing games, it's kind of hard to tell. Because you have some teams that are really, really good football teams from a talent standpoint, developmental standpoint. But there's that mindset that I think it's kind of difficult to achieve. It is not an easy mindset to get to. So I would be very surprised if the team is at that third stage, that expect to win. And I wholeheartedly agree with it. I mean, you and I have talked about in the past on this podcast that when I played at Nebraska and you lost a game, now I'm not talking about, all jokes aside, the 92 Iowa State game. I'm talking about pretty much every game we played. When you lost, you were legitimately surprised. You weren't so much angry. You weren't so much upset. You were just flat out surprised at the fact that you lost the game. I mean, it almost kind of took a while to digest after a loss because of that. Like I said, surprise is the best word. You've got to have that kind of expectation where instead of being angry at a loss, you're surprised by it.
And that takes a while to get there. And that leads us into Jason's question, which I think is very good. Do you think this fandemonium has become overblown because Husker fans may be expecting the same quick turnaround in Lincoln as they had in Orlando? And I got into an argument with somebody on Facebook the other day. He comes off and he's like, all right, Iowa fans and anybody else, this is your year. After this, it's all over. And I'm like, dude, you need to back up. First of all, and I think that's what, from a national perspective, I think that's what drives a lot of other fan bases nuts. And I know people don't care about other fan bases, but living in the past is a hard thing to do, and it's a dangerous thing to do.
And I don't even think Nebraska fans like living in the past. I think they are so damn hungry that I think that might cause a little bit of overblown optimism. You know, the thing is, though, I don't think most of the fans are thinking this is going to be an 8, 9, 10 win season.
It's more of the vocal minority that's like, it is.
They're a very vocal minority. But I think a lot of Husker fans have an understanding of how difficult this is going to be. And I think they're still thinking that way because they have a lot of optimism for the future.
And it's
probably won't be this year, may not be next year, but somewhere year three, year four, I think people are expecting you're going to start seeing a definite turnaround. And I think Nebraska fans are incredibly optimistic because of that.
And that's fine, but I always also use Penn State as an example of it's hard to be up there every single year. I mean, it's tough. I mean, this isn't the Big 8. It's not even the old Big 12, because even Nebraska found towards its time in the Big 12, it was hard to stay up at the top there. It was. And even winning that championship game.
Big 12 was difficult, although...
But Nebraska...
Because Nebraska got...
But the North dominated...
Nebraska only got 2 years in the Big 12 under Osborne. They should have won it both years.
You're right. 96, they should have won it.
Yeah, they really should have. I think if Osborne sticks around, I think Nebraska just absolutely dominates the Big 12. And you've seen team... You saw Colorado and Texas dominate the Big 12 for a number of years. Then you saw K-State and Oklahoma dominate the Big 12 for a number of years. It's possible to do it. And I think it's even possible to do in the present day. I mean, you look at what Oklahoma's done in the Big 12. Of course, they can't count. Anyway. it's like when Penn State joined the Big 10. Couldn't count. Yeah. Anyway. It's possible to do it, but it is so hard to maintain that. 5 years easy to do, 10 years possible, but it's a lot harder. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. I preface this with, it tends to be coach and coach dependent to a strong degree.
That's true.
You think Alabama is going to stay this strong of a team
when Nick Saban leaves?
Saban leaves, unless somebody like Kirby Smart comes back, or they can. I don't think it had happened, but if they could get Dabo Swinney from Clemson to come from Clemson back to Alabama, that'd be the only way it had happened. Is if Kirby goes back, or if Dabo returns to his alma mater. That's the only way Alabama maintains what they're doing now under Saban.
Look at these guys just poking the bear. Jeff says, "Hey, fellas, this debate needs to be brought up once again since it's Colorado week. Does Doc still think Brooke Berger is a top four quarterback all time in Nebraska?"
Yes. What do you put in front of him?
We've had this discussion. It was funny. Somebody wrote and said, "Hey, I know Remington doesn't want the F-bombs, but just bring up this subject."
Yeah, fine. Make him number four, but he's still top four.
Okay.
And I mean, honest to God, I go in no particular order here. Frazier, Frost, Behringer, and Taggy.
But Crouch isn't in there. Guy won the Heisman Trophy.
He's top five. That's pretty damn good.
Turner Gill's not on there.
Six.
Jamal Lord's not on there.
Best option quarterback ever.
Zach Taylor's not on there.
Great passing quarterback, Nebraska Hall of Famer. What are they missing?
Wins, championships,
second one there.
Yeah,
the big number one.
Yeah, but that's just. But Brooke didn't win a championship. Tommy did. Oh,
did it. I wasn't even trying to do it. That might have been the most spontaneous F-bomb.
I want everybody to know.
I put a freaking lid on
it. I want everybody to know that was the first time in how many years, 4 or 5 years doing this podcast, I really at that point thought Rob was going to hit me. He gave me this look like I'm coming across the table right now. I'd love poking the bear.
Son of a bitch.
So much fun.
Dave didn't say I couldn't say that one.
I know. But it was
like, I almost dropped it.
Your eyes lit up. You're like, ah!
God, I'm not quite sure how I put a cap on that.
I think I'm the only one who could get Rob riled up. He was just doing an interview with Michael Severe on. Was it live on 590 or was it recorded?
It was live today.
Were you in the studio or were you?
I went down to the studio.
Yeah. And we want to thank Michael for having Rob on a regular basis. We want to thank Michael Severe for also pubbing the podcast, because there's a lot of people that have you on their show and they don't pub the podcast. And that kind of bothers me a little bit. Because
I try to slip it in.
I know you do, but Michael's good at it, and I appreciate that. There's other shows that aren't as good at it, and I'm like, why? I mean, you just don't have an exclusive right to Rob. I mean, he does almost an hour worth of podcasting, and he gets to be himself.
I'm a media slut.
That's right. You are. Anybody. Yeah, you are. So, hey, Colorado this weekend, it's going to be a good game. Huskers finally going to play.
Well, actually, I have something to freaking talk about.
Yes. That's the whole thing. You know, we're coming off, we're hoping we'd be able to say, okay, this is what we liked about Adrian Martinez. This is what we liked about the running back situation. We have nothing to base anything off of right now, instead of just crossing your fingers and hope that, you know, you're
and
just.
And even limited looks at practice.
Yeah.
I mean, the media hasn't had great practice viewing capability.
But we do know offensively, Colorado has some players, and Nebraska has said it can give up yards. It'd be how much they give up. I mean, and how many points they give up. Listen, they beat Colorado State 45-13. It was at Mile High Stadium. At the end of the day, Colorado State's a bad football team.
But they're one of those.
Yeah, but they're
like
bad.
Iowa State. Even when Iowa State's been horrible, they still give Iowa.
Yeah, I know. But it's just Colorado State's just a really, really, really bad football team. And that's why I don't think you can take much away from a 45-13 win. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. We want to thank the Remington Trophy for sponsoring and being the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. I want to thank Ticket Express. I want to thank Husker Hounds. I want to thank Infusion Brewing Company. Drink the Mets Jubilee. It's a great afternoon beer. Yeah. Say that again, I had your mic down.
It's a good classic lager. Great beer. This is a really good everyday beer.
And we want to thank HuskerMax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll be back next week, talking about the first time we've actually seen the Nebraska football team play. Thanks for listening. Share the podcast with friends. Enjoy the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.